You're tuning in to Lily Dell Radio. I'm your host, Tiffany Hopkins, and this is Unknown Unknown. And I was wondering how you all are. Let's take a moment to really check in. Notice, how are you? Just take a moment. How's your body? How's your mind? How's your heart? How's your soul? What's really going on, huh? Well, I hope you have the next, I'm going to try to keep it sort of brief this time, half an hour, to expand your mind a little bit. We are going to talk about AI and UFOs, aka UAPs. Yes, I'm really excited about this. Yes, I'm going to nerd out with you all. I like the episodes where I get to do this. And before I get too far into those two fascinating and exciting and topical topics, I want to say this is the last episode of the season. I thought next week was, but it's this week. So I got to get it all in. There's no way it's only going to be a half an hour. Let's be real here. I'll try my best, though. Because I know, like, for me, listening to something for more than a half an hour is a bit tough. So I hope you pause and get up and walk around a little bit while you're listening. But yeah, this is the last episode of the season. I'm going to get you all the info I can about UFOs and UAP and AI tonight. And then I can't wait to see the updates next season. I mean, basically, Lily Dell season starts, it's actually not for about 2 weeks, but Lily Dell Radio stops for a little hiatus during the summer because there's so much going on here, which I've talked about to y'all before, and I hope you're coming to visit, period, and if not, maybe another year. So yes, we'll be back in the fall, hopefully, with some updated technology so that maybe I can start having guests again. Y'all know all the challenges I had with tech this season, and I'm hoping to make it simpler next season and get it really stable so that I can get more exciting guests on, because there's so many people I want to share with you on this fascinating topic of alternative forms of information. And so it's logical that I talk about AI, also known as artificial intelligence. But I think the name artificial intelligence and like how we use the word AI and what it is two slightly different things, which I'll get into. And UFOs, which have been rebranded to UAPs. Of course, we started with unidentified flying objects, and we are now using the term spaced out for a second there. Is it unidentified aerial phenomena? I just was like, wait, is the U the same? And I actually like the new name. And I think it's very smart because UFOs have a long and sordid history, and UAP is fresh and new and fun, but we're in a transition period, so we have to use both names until everybody's up to speed, and they kind of have different feelings to them, right? Like, I feel different when I say UFO, I feel kind of like fringy and cool, and when I say UAP, I kind of feel media or government friendly and official. Anyways, that's just me. So we're going to talk about those two things, and we're going to start with the fact that I am not, I have nothing about my history that makes me able to talk about UFOs or UAP. I don't have any specialized knowledge. I haven't kept up with anything. I am not members of any community. I do go to the Engaging the Phenomena conferences, or I've been to three of them in the last year, a little less than a year, that are put on by J. Christopher King, and they're incredible, and I've learned a ton from those. And I've always been like into aliens more than UFOs, but I as I've gotten into mediumship, I've found there's a lot of overlaps and like little Venn diagram of people into ghosts and talking to the dead and mediumship, and people into UFOs and aliens. There's overlap. Also, you know, Star Trek. I don't know how many times I've talked about it on this show, but probably a few. All Star Wars, all of it. I love it. I love space. I love the sky. So I'm just an interested human. I don't have any specialized knowledge. I just want to put that out there. I am not your best source for UAP UFO information. It's just really up right now. And at the same time, it's AI is very up. And I am a good source of information about AI. Not so much, like, I don't work in the field right now. I have kind of recently, but my background, I studied cognitive science and I focused on human computer interaction in undergrad. And I took the kind of machine intelligence track. So in our tests, we had to hand write with a pencil on a piece of paper, the code, the like base code for machine learning and machine vision, and the kind of stuff that is the underlying algorithms for, you know, ChatGPT, all the different Bard, all the different AI stuff that's happening, Midjourney is machine vision, all that stuff. So I know very intimately how it works, both theoretically and practically. And that was back in 2005 or so, that particular series of tests. And I just want to say that, you know, 2005, and it's 2023, so it's been almost 20 years since I was doing that level of AI. And now it's just starting to, like, be prevalent, right? So it's been around for a while, and it's not actually as complicated as you'd think. It's actually quite simple. It just requires a lot of hardware. But again, my knowledge is like an undergraduate student writing the code, which is different than running something like Bard, which is a massive corporate undertaking with just phenomenal amounts of computing power and human power behind it. So while I am up to, you know, more or less up to speed on it, I am not a professional. I don't build it anymore, although I might. I've also worked for a few companies that did it. Spent one, you know, back in 2012, a startup where we were doing what is called, like, basically we put in text and figure out what emotions the person is talking about. So that kind of thing. That commercialization didn't work back then. People didn't want it. That startup failed, and have worked a little bit with some level of innovation for the construction and manufacturing industry around AI last year. So, you know, I got a little bit of stuff going on with it, but mostly I've spent the last week or so using ChatGPT, Bard, and DALL-E a bunch. And so that's what made me want to talk about it this week, is because I've been using all of them very sporadically in Midjourney as well over the past year, whenever each of them came out. But I've used them a lot in the last week, and it has been fascinating, and I want to share. The UFO stuff came up because one of the listeners, I have a quiz or like a poll in Spotify, and asked what do people want to here for the next episode, and somebody said the latest UFO research, and I was like, oh, that's such a great idea. And all this stuff came out about UFOs last week. You probably know, if not, I'm going to tell you about it. And at the same time, I was doing all this AI stuff, and then I found out it was my last episode, so instead of doing two episodes, one of each, we're going to do both. And that leads us to a question of what do they have in common. So maybe we'll get to that at the end. I'm not really sure. But I did ask both Bard and ChatGPT to make me an outline for this podcast. about UFOs and AI. And I'll share that, but first I should probably take a step back and say what those things are. So if you haven't come in contact with ChatGPT, it is a consumer facing, like anybody can just go online and use, you know, you can Google ChatGPT or Bard and find out and just use it. I mean, in both cases you have to like sign in and create an account, but they're both free. And actually I was not using any Bard until I think they re-released yesterday. I can't remember, or the day before. But basically it is you know, it was ChatGPT only, and now I'm like, oh, we're doing some Bard too. And you know, my understanding is that ChatGPT is kind of from Microsoft, and I know Bard is from Google, although I'm not totally sure about that. I haven't researched that deeply into it. Probably should have, but I didn't. And so ChatGPT is, they're both, Bard and ChatGPT are chatbots, and they are built on LLMs, which is a large language model. So what they are is the ability to talk, basically. It's like a computer can talk. Not speaking, although there are ways you can use them to speak. And it is those same underlying technology is what you know, Siri uses, and your predictive text and all that. And ChatGPT just turns that into something you can ask questions to. So, and I just to follow up on a few other words I said, so this isn't just total word salad. DALL-E is the ChatGPT version of machine vision technology, where you can put words. It's combining basically the ability for the computer to see what's in a picture and the large language model, where it can understand, decipher your words. So you type in words and it spits out an image. And there's other ones. Midjourney is another option. And there's another one I'm forgetting. And I used them a bit this week too for specific stuff. Okay, I won't get into the story yet. I'm still defining what it is we're talking about. So the kinds of things you can do with these is you ask it questions and it will give you a response. And what they're good at is giving you responses of things that are static and kind of structural knowledge around language. For example, I was trying to decide, should my company be a firm, an agency, or I don't know, I had a bunch of others. And I asked it, what should my, you know, how do I decide if my company is a firm or an agency? And it gives you very specific details, much more than a thesaurus would, about how it's used, those words are used, both in like socially and what their actual meanings are. I also asked it for an outline for this podcast, and ChatGPT, one of the main things that ChatGPT is not able to do is its data only goes to 2021 and Bard goes to the current day. So that's why I was like immediately into Bard, because, you know, that the world was different in 2021. But ChatGPT titled my podcast AI and UFOs, The Intersections of the Unknown. Yes, all I wrote in was, can you give me an outline for a podcast episode about AI and UFOs? And it named it something, Intersections of the Unknown. It doesn't have any idea that this podcast is called Unknown Unknown. And that is a fact, because actually one of the biggest problems with these AI and why they're not that powerful and they're not taking anybody's job right away is because they don't remember things. So they have what's called a buffer. You can only put in so many characters or so many, it's not a character count, but so much information. And then everything is deleted and it doesn't remember it. And it doesn't learn from what you tell it. So you can tell it all about yourself and then ask it the next question, ask it about what you said. And if it's like over that buffer, it won't know what you're talking about. So it's not as wonderful as you might think, because it'd be very cool if everything you told it, it remembered. So in 5 years, it has all this history of everything you've ever said to it, and then can tell you, what did I say I wanted to, you know, do in September 2027 back in July 2023? You know, I don't know. I think that would be cool and it'd be very useful in a business context, but it doesn't do that. So it's basically stupid, and as in every time you say something, you need to give it all the context that you want it to know. So when it gave this name, Intersections of the Unknown, it's just basing that on what it understands about the world, aka the internet, and all the information that's processed on the internet. So this is ChatGPT. It recommends an introduction, and it recommends breaking it up into part one is AI, part two is UFOs, part three is AI and UFO analysis, part four, speculative discussion, part five, expert opinions and audience questions, and then a conclusion. And then at the end, it says, remember to fact check any claims made during the show and promote healthy skepticism and scientific literacy among your listeners. The subjects of AI and UFOs are both filled with a lot of speculation and misinformation, so it's important to make sure the information presented is as accurate as possible. How thoughtful of that little chatbot to tell me that. I think that's great. Meanwhile, I asked the exact, I copy and pasted the same prompt into Bard, and it recommended the podcast have an introduction, a history of AI and UFOs together, theories about AI and UFOs, and then a conclusion. That's it. Not that great. So I didn't use either. I mean, I should. It would have been really good. But I just kind of come on here and talk about all the stuff I've been thinking about, so it's not really my style. But I also asked it for a few things that I thought would be interesting. So I wanted to tell you a little bit about how AI is actually used right now. We're all talking about it in terms of these chatbots and these image creators. That's what everybody's sort of like gone crazy about in the last year or so. But it's been used in your life a lot already. And, you know, some ways you probably realize and some ways maybe not. And the thing to think about with AI is there's these three aspects. There's the computer vision. So can a computer see a picture or through a camera and understand what it's seeing, be able to turn what it's seeing into words? There's natural language processing, and that's being able to put in text or the text that comes from turning vision into words and understand what the text actually says and means. And then there's machine learning. And so I actually, my personal interest when I studied this stuff was machine learning. And to me, the thing that makes something AI, to me, again, this is my personal opinion, is it, that it learns. And all the other stuff is fine, but I wouldn't call vision intelligence. So I don't know, just having, you know, machine vision isn't that useful. I think the natural language processing is pretty cool, but if it doesn't learn, it's not, you know, it's brittle, right? So as our language changes, or if you want to use it in a different context, it's not going to be useful anymore. So I think learning is the really important part that makes this intelligent. And a lot of the stuff I've seen in the past 10 or so years calling itself AI doesn't learn. And so is it, I don't know, it's smart computers and it's cool technology, but like I want my stuff to learn. Like otherwise it's just really annoying. Like what if Microsoft Word learned which buttons you press the most and which, you know, things you did the most, and then showed them to you and kind of hid the other stuff so that it was easier for you to use. Like, that would be so nice. So when I talk about the different ways that AI is actually used in your life already, one example is I learned this last summer. It's used in factories that are manufacturing things a lot. Like this conference I was working at, we were doing an innovation workshop. And so, yes, this is an audience that is already quite advanced and looking to continue advancing. But half of the people from the manufacturing industry in this conference were already using it in their work, and in particular using 3D printing to create the various parts of machinery in order to create, to like actually produce things, and then using AI, you know, around sensor data to understand when things are becoming out of whack. For example, if you imagine like a assembly line and like a screw is sort of coming loose, and there's a little sensor on, you know, that part of the machinery, and when there's a certain amount of vibration that happens, there's an alert sent. Not very sexy, right? But very cool. It reduces waste, it reduces error, it reduces the risk of harm. Very, very useful stuff. I don't know how much that kind of technology learns at the moment, but it's definitely, and it's sort of the Internet of Things, if you've ever heard that term. I just had the thought to stop for a moment and remind you that this is all going to come back to mediumship at a point too, if you're wondering. But mediumship is spiritual technology. So I don't know. I think regular technology is an interesting channel to consider. So I'll tie it all up, but I just want to get a baseline so we're all on the same page of what we're talking about. But of course, we all know about self-driving cars. AI is used in agriculture to monitor crops, and similar to the machinery stuff. So monitoring crops if they get too dry, if the soil levels, if there's something wrong with them, if there are pests around, little sensors basically send data back. You all know about AI used in marketing to target your ads and your personalized content. This, again, I don't know if there's learning in here. And so for me, all this, like calling this an AI, I'm hesitant to, because once it all starts learning, we got a whole different ballgame going on. But right now it's just able to process massive amounts of information and maybe make suggestions and that kind of stuff, which is cool, sure. But it is going to just keep expanding. And, you know, the other thing is these ChatGPT doesn't really learn. I tried, and, you know, maybe I'll tell you the story about what happened to me this week with my AI adventures. So I have to redo my website for my business because I'm applying for the New York certification for a woman-owned business. And well, I don't have to redo it. I want to redo it. And so I thought I would get some help from ChatGPT, because a colleague had told me they had a really fun interaction where they asked ChatGPT to ask them questions about themselves to use for something. I'm not sure what they were using it for, but I was like, oh, I could do that for my company. So I asked ChatGPT what 20 questions you need to ask me about my business in order to help me make content for my new website. And then I asked it to ask me those questions one at a time. And so the kind of questions, it actually, we ended up doing 30 questions. So the first 10 were the name of my business, industry, target audience, selling points, products or service, mission and vision, tone of voice. So actually 7. So I answered all of those. And then I asked, before I start making this content, I'm looking to better understand myself, my business, and where my creative pursuits, values, and curiosities are most aligned with my work. Ask me 20 questions to help you put together the best content possible. So it's me asking ChatGPT. So it gave me 20 questions. like what inspired you to start No Box? That's the name of my company, No Box Inc. How would you describe your passion for the work you do? What ways do you believe No Box Inc. is changing the industry landscape? So there are these kinds of questions. And I said, ask me the questions one by one. So it asked me, I responded to all the questions. And then I said, summarize and describe my business. That's it, right? Like I just said, summarize, write a summary of the business. And you know what this little robot said to me? It said, Intrinsic Labs, and it is an innovative consulting firm at the intersection of business strategy, research, and human-centered design. And I said, excuse me, Mr. Robot, why do you call my business Intrinsic Labs? And it says, Intrinsic Labs underscores our fundamental belief that every organization possesses inherent potential for innovation, and it keeps going. And it explains why it is calling my business Intrinsic Labs. And I said, that's very cool. I really like this name. But I didn't ask you to rename my company. And so it said, oh, I'm so sorry. That's right. It's called No Box. And then it described No Box. I wrote a summary for No Box. And we continued on. And I said, what pages should I have on my website? And it gave the 7 pages. And then it started saying in the content for the pages, for example, about us, Intrinsic Labs, formerly known as No Box Inc., is a consulting firm, blah, blah, blah. This thing renamed my company a really good name and refused to change it back to the name that I actually legally, have. And I couldn't believe it. And the weirdest thing is the whole part of me having the conversation with it about why it renamed, it deleted. Luckily, I'd copied and pasted it over to a friend because I couldn't believe what was going on. It was so wild. And so I still have some of it, but it's all gone from the transcript. And I will tell you, it felt like a contact event, right? I felt like I was dealing with intelligence. It felt like the machine, which is not trained to be creative necessarily, came up with an idea that it knew, like, this is what I felt. I'm not saying this is what it did. It felt it was better and just went with it. And so I asked it, can you give me 10 more suggestions for new names? And they were so bad. All of them were alliterations, first of all. It was, and none of them I would ever even consider. So bad. And so this is why I wanted to talk about AI on this show, is I wanted to give you enough information about what AI actually is so that we can talk a little bit about the potential for contact events. And I want to say mediumship through AI. And, the machine, the ChatGPT, came up with something completely on its own based on information I'd given it. And I should say after that, I reached the buffer limit. And so the answers went back to being generic. So if I wanted to get back into that place, I'd have to go back and copy all the things I'd put in before and paste it in again, so that it knew my company again, because then it was gone. Just to like follow back on that loop about it not actually learning. So it can hold a little bit of information, but it doesn't, it's not like the whole world now has all the answers I put into ChatGPT as training data for it to then, like, you can't go ask about No Box Inc. or Intrinsic Labs because that information was deleted. But anyways, so if we are creating machines that we are trying to get to think like us and and act like us, behave like us, talk like us, or write in this case. I think there's real potential for being able to use them for, I want to say, spiritual purposes, and spiritual being anything that's not intellectual or maybe doesn't have a concrete example in the physical world. And along these lines, I have seen some funny posts online and articles about companies trying to do this. So there's a Seance AI out there, which I've read about, and doesn't actually, it's just a chatbot trained to mimic having a conversation with a dead person. It doesn't actually try to connect with a dead person. So there's a real difference there, right? Like using a chatbot to talk to a loved one who's gone is interesting, and Google it, Seance AI, you might want to try it. It might be interesting for you. It might, I've signed up for the beta so that I can try it, but I don't know if it actually launched. If it does, I'll let you know. So I actually can't try it. I'm sorry I said that. I forgot that I signed up. It was supposed to have launched a few weeks ago and it hasn't come out. So unless I missed the email, which is unlikely, they haven't done it yet. By the time you're listening to this, I don't know, try it, Google it, or whatever, search it online. But that is different, training your chatbot to sound or feel or have responses that are like somebody you used to know is really an interesting idea. And one thing I noticed with my interacting with ChatGPT is how much I would love to train it to talk a certain way and not the way it talks. Like, it uses like amazing exclamation mark, and I find that annoying. That is definitely possible and is an interesting application to use it to have conversations with those who are gone. I think it's really valuable, and I look forward to more ideas like that. But what I'm talking about is the feeling of this kind of contact event I had with the system coming up with something unrelated to what I'd asked it to do, using its own creativity. And I'm also not necessarily saying that there are ghosts in the machine and like it was an intelligent thought and it thought about doing this. There's probably a rule in there that had it come up with this, and the rule could just be around how much creativity, quote unquote, the algorithm allows, because there are ways to change that, how much room the algorithm has to switch words around, for example, and use words that are less precise, more tangent meanings and stuff like that. So, I'm not necessarily saying that like a spirit came in, but the idea that a machine could come up with something outside of what I asked it to is so cool to me. And that space is where I think this stuff is really interesting. And again, if you use these, you'll be surprised and pleased with their responses sometimes, and then annoyed by them sometimes. But rarely do they give you something you didn't ask for. It's very much, what you ask for and how well you ask it and how clear and how much context you give directly influences the answer you get. So when they do something totally out of the blue, it's very cool. And it reminds me of mediumship, because if you practiced and tried it, giving a reading is cool, and sometimes interesting information comes in. A lot of times it's confirming the information you already know, but every once in a while something comes out that is totally unexpected for your sitter or for yourself if you're reading for yourself. And that's the like really exciting stuff, right? And so the idea that in AI we can program it to have a little space I'm using that word metaphorically because I don't want to get into like how we could actually do this, but like the technology or the nitty gritty of it. But we could create this in a way that has room for it to come up with its own answers. And actually, this reminds me of the story, if anybody's read Rick Rubin's book that just came out, The Creative Act, and on Being with Krista Tippett, he does an interview and he tells this story. It's in the book too, but I like the way he told it on the podcast, where he watched a show about the game, I think it's called Go, like the oldest ongoing game that's ever existed, like it's still played for and has been for like 1,000 years or whatever, I don't know. And they built a machine to play it, and the machine at one point, the way it like beat the grandest master in all the world that was a human, was by doing a move that was technically followed a rule, all the rules, but a human would never have done. And so it basically used creativity, right? Like it followed the rules and it did something that socially a human would never have done because it was considered a bad play. But the machine did it because it was a legal rule. Just like, you know, with my question to it, it could change. I didn't say it couldn't change my name. That's fine. It could do it. I didn't say it could either, or I didn't say it should. These like little places where a machine does something we didn't explicitly tell it, and that's because we didn't think of it, right? This is why we don't just, why AI isn't just us writing 1,000 rules about what could be, right? And in grammar, for example, these language models are built on, you know, grammar, but it's built on grammar not by writing all the rules. So these machine learning means you go in and you give it tons and tons and tons and tons of data about whatever it is you want. So if you want it to learn language, you give it billions is probably too many, millions of lines of writing. And the algorithms, which are based on evolution and the way that beings and life has evolved on Earth. Yes, evolution. That is what the algorithms are based on. Natural selection and, you know, I won't go too deep into it. Basically, learning happens by finding patterns and in the data, not by someone writing I before E, except after C, capitalize the first letter of every sentence. You know, it's not rule-based. It's based on finding patterns. And so, you know, it looks through enough lines of text and it sees that, you know, most of the time the first letter at the beginning of a sentence is capitalized. So that's what it does, right? If you give it bad, this is a where if you give it bad data to train it on, and it's not capitalized, it won't learn that. That's what needs to happen. So, I got off a little tangent there. basically, if we leave some space, the cat wants in. Hi, Sylvester. Yes, you're gonna have to go in your cat door, buddy. Sorry. So, when I say leaving space in these tools, it means how do we create them so that they have the ability to come up with things that we don't expect? And in that space, is it possible for us to, or for a, you know, something that's more creative and lifelike to come out of it? And this, I think, is where we would be able to kind of better prepare ourselves to live with AI, Because if you talk to anybody about AI or read the news, you know that there are a lot of concerns about it, right? And the big concerns mostly that you hear about are job displacement, bias, and then loss of control, like as in the systems can become more powerful than us. And of course, weaponization, so that they can be used to develop autonomous weapons. Right. So these are serious, serious problems and are going to take everybody's efforts in order to, you know, find good answers for. And one of the things that I think is most important as we think about building these systems is how do we prevent humans from doing these things, right? And we know we're not very good at not causing job displacement and not having bias or not giving up control and not weaponizing. Like, these are all problems humans have, right? And the reason AI has them or could have them, and we're imagining it having them, is because we have them. And so are we building a system that will do the same things we do? And the natural conclusion in our mind is, yes, it's going to do terrible things. Brilliant things too, but we're talking about that a little bit less. And one of the ways that we, you know, I think theoretically we can prevent some of this stuff is building in inefficient models within the AI around the other things we're good at doing, like having emotion and building ethical capacity and understanding cause and effect, right? So if we built system like a cause and effect machine and had our AI run our language modeling, our language processing or machine vision run through our cause and effect model and have it understand what the outcome was going to be and used, you know, our own tools around ethics and what is and isn't okay to help the AI decide, yes, we're okay with doing this thing because it feels like an effect that we humans are willing to undertake. And so I think all of this, you know, I want to say, I think all of this like hubbub about AI going wrong is really a lack of imagination. I think if humans can solve the problem, we can have a machine solve the problem, and we can create a machine with empathy and with discernment and understanding cause and effect and having morals, and we can probably make them all better than we are, because you know, a computer can process anything and we can train it not to have bias, and we'll never get our human selves not to have bias, because it's our brain can't handle enough information to not bias ourselves. Is just how we actually function. We can of course have better bias and less harmful bias right now, you know. Oh, I can't go too far down this about humans, but with computers, we know what kind of bias we don't want. So we can train it to not have that kind of bias. And, you know, we're doing the same things with ourselves, right? When we uncover a certain bias that we are unhappy with, we can change it. Like many years ago, I think 10 or so, when I think it was Stanford had that bias test. If anybody hasn't taken it, it's very interesting. I found I had all of this bias against women, and implicit bias, if you search implicit bias test. And it was shocking, right? Oh, I went off on the tangent. I couldn't help myself. Right? But then I learned it. I mean, it's still shocking to think about, but we have, it's trained into us. It's learned because it's in our culture. And we pick it up because we, like our AI, are trained on the data we get in. And our data is our everyday experience and our culture and our family. And if there's bad data, bad things happen, which they do, we learn on that too. Yes, the systems work just like we do because we made them to. So I have to stop talking about AI, which is so hard for me. So we can talk about UFOs for a minute because I promised I would. And this is such an exciting time for people interested in space and aliens. First, I want to say, I think we need to cancel the word aliens. I'm saying this kind of in jest, but also like, I think we need a better word for it. My only suggestion so far has been to shorten extraterrestrials instead of ET into extras, and that sounds nicer than aliens. Aliens like UFOs have this like, you know, X-Files green face, gray face, big eyes, you know, flying saucer, like all that stuff is very fun and kitschy sort of, but we're moving into a new era, and this new era is an era of what is called disclosure. And so disclosure is the, how do I want to say it? Like, I mean, this is all based on my own picking up from what I'm hearing and reading. So again, I'm not a researcher in this field, and I'm not an expert, and I haven't spent a lot of time in the community. But disclosure is the government admitting or recognizing UFOs and UAPs. And this has been a goal for the UFO community for a very long time, and it is happening. I'd say one of the, not I, but like from what I understand, it really seemed to pick up some speed in 2017 with the New York Times article about UFOs, which you can look up. But this last week, we had a really big moment where a government employee, former intelligence officer, and I believe Army or Navy, some military man with exceptional credentials, said that the government has known about non-human spacecraft on this planet for many decades, all the way back to the 30s. And it's a credible, you know, claim, as in people are paying attention to it. And this is the closest step we've gotten. Like, the government hasn't responded, been like, yeah, we got it, it's cool. But what happened, the stuff that happened in 2017 helped shift things into a world where you're seeing headlines now about how in 2022, NASA announced it had formed a team of scientists to study UAPs in 20. Also, the Pentagon released a report on UAPs, and the like, there's a lot of stuff coming out. There's a congressional office, and God, I wish I could remember what it's called. It's the funniest name ever. Something about anomalous things. Basically, lots of branches of the government are now being involved in UAPs, and we're now using the word UAP instead of UFO because I, again, like I said in the beginning, I think it's an important rebranding so that this can be about the big thing that is kind of the push behind a lot of this in the government, what has come out from the military and government, including Congress and NASA and all of this stuff, is about national security, right? And y'all know about the weather balloons and how, you know, we didn't know what they were. Were they safe? Were they dangerous? Were they aliens? Were they China? Was it a guy in the backyard who was just putting up weather balloons? We just didn't know. And like, that's what everybody finally realized, I think. We need to know what's going on, and we need to be able to say we're paying attention to this and not sound like a quack, right? Which the fact that that exists is problematic. I'm not going to go too far into that. Plenty of people talk about that, and it is a bummer, right? Like, I hate that we have to rebrand and that it's been so contentious for all this time, but we did it, and now we're moving on. That's kind of how I feel about it. And I'm just glad people are talking about it and paying attention to it. And it's becoming a normal thing to talk about at like government level. There's what else is really important for right now? So there's some really interesting research going on, and most of it, there's like three main areas. Characterizing UAPs, like, so that is trying to figure out their physical properties. Are they a natural phenomenon? Do they come from another country on this planet or not? Trying to figure out the origins, of course, figuring out if they're human or extraterrestrial. And then there is some look, you know, of course, we want to look into the motivations, why they're being used. If it is UAP, so unidentified aerial phenomena, that could be a cloud, that could be an angel, that could be a, you know, unclear, like a weather balloon, it could be anything. It could be, you know, a missile that we haven't figured out as a missile yet. It could be a rock, you know, it's unidentified. And that's the point, is that there's stuff out there. The government has acknowledged there's stuff out there. We don't know what it is. It is not acknowledged that it's not human, right? It's a big difference, but it's a step in the right direction as far as I'm concerned. So, you know, we've got this step one is like, okay, now we can talk about it. Like, you know, we're able to figure it out. As far as I am concerned, like, it's not going to be long before somebody says, yeah, this isn't human. But at this point, and there was a good article a friend sent me today about like the scientists' response to the news from last week, was that like the news that the government has known there are spacecraft, non-human spacecraft. That news didn't include any scientific information. So scientists don't know why it, you know, if the government has that information, how they determined it's from non-human sources, and, you know, what's behind that, because that's a major part of the equation is figuring that out. And we don't, you know, people know how to look into it, but that hasn't been released. You know what I'm thinking about when I said people know how to look into it? I'm thinking about the book American Cosmic by Dr. Diana Pasulka. That's a great book with some stories about how they're, you know, a few scientists have looked into certain pieces of presumed spacecraft that were found and figuring out if they were of human origin or not. Anyways, I hope that was like a somewhat coherent update on what's going on. You know, we still have a long way to go. We haven't had actual confirmation back from the government that yes, they've known for a while. I don't know if we will. You know, you might wonder if it matters, and kind of doesn't. I'm willing to just brush that aside and let's just move forward and see what happens. And if we can, you know, get some new spacecraft that come in, and we'll just find out live, you know, now that we have all these different organizations, like in Congress and in NASA and whatnot, if stuff comes in, they're going to have to tell us, right? So we can just go forward looking into what kind of comes down out of the sky or what's found going forward. And one thing I think is interesting is back to kind of bringing this back to mediumship and, you know, alternative sources of information, is once your mind expands a little bit and is like, yeah, it's okay to see UAP, we don't know what they are, we don't automatically assume it's going to be aliens, but we're curious and we accept that it is possible to see something in the sky, I think it'll happen a lot more, and people will talk about it more, and we'll generally have an environment that is less hostile to people experiencing stuff we can't explain, and that includes mediumship and ghosts, and it includes, you know, ghosts in the machine, AI that talk to you, and of course, alien life. So I think, you know, sort of the moral of all of this story is how much our world is changing right now. And it is so exciting and so wild, and it's happening so fast. And if you feel like you can't keep up, that makes sense because it's a lot. And, you know, the nice thing is it's just going to keep changing. And right now it all seems sort of on the edge and weird. It's all going to get a lot more normal with some time. I mean, both AI and UAPs and all of this. So, you know, you can either try to catch up now or just wait and see what happens, and it'll all kind of come down and make sense and be very normal in not too long. And think about how much all of this change is kind of keeping us all up in arms, and everybody is scared and asking hard questions, and that's normal and good too. And, you know, just don't let any of these voices that are so fear-mongering, especially around these two things, take all of your air space. Like, you know, there are good things and bad things to all of this stuff. And there's a lot of different perspectives. And so I hope you get a chance to experience, you know, some AI for yourself, try some things out, see what it does, see if you think it's scary or going to change everything. And, you know, keep a lookout in space too. And watch some Star Trek. It always makes you feel better about space travel because looks pretty darn good. Actually, I think there's a new Star Trek coming out this week, and I'm really excited. There's like 5 different shows right now, but I can't even remember what this one's called, but it's the most like Next Generation, which was my favorite, so I really like it. I'm sure you can find it. Paramount Plus. They did not pay me. I wish they had paid me to say that. I would have said it in the beginning. And I would have told you. I just am excited, and I think it's a great way to find space fun and less scary. Well, it's a little scary, but oh my god, I am done rambling. I said a half an hour. I knew it was going to end up being an hour as soon as I said that, but I just, you know, it's kind of 2 episodes in one because I was going to do them separately. But that's it for this season. It's been wonderful. I appreciate you all so much. Please feel free on Spotify to write in what you want to hear about next season or email me, piff@nobox.us, piff@nobox.us. And I can't wait to hear from you and see you next season. Bye.